I went with my family, traveled yesterday to Mexico. I just got back. I flew out late last night. We had spent 2 days without power, and my girls wanted to take a trip with their friends. You know, I have to admit, I started having second thoughts almost the moment I sat down on the plane. My intention was to take care of my family, which was the intention of Texans, every Texan across the country and across the state.
To your weekly Fonzie Scheme Briefing. I'm your host, Evan Fonfa, here to tell you all the bullshit that happened in the news this week.
The Senate judges that the respondent, Donald John Trump, former President of the United States, is not guilty as charged in the article of impeachment.
At long last, there is nothing left to talk about concerning the Trump presidency. On February 13th, Donald Trump was acquitted in his second impeachment trial to reach the Senate. The vote fell 10 votes short of the 2/3 required for conviction, but believe it or not, that leaves 7 remotely sane Republicans who chose not to stand with Trump. However, many of those Republican senators who voted to convict Trump were censured by their state parties for doing so. Trump will be calling the shots for the Republican Party from the grave. You heard it here first. The impeachment was related to the former president's incitement of violence that led to the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th. It made little sense for the trial to take place right now, since we're now over a month into Joe Biden's presidency and a COVID relief package has still not been passed. Both houses of Congress are spending a lot of breath and time on less important issues, while millions of Americans continue to fall behind on bills due to the government's mismanagement of the pandemic. Either way, Trump needed to be tried for his crimes at some point, although it was obvious from the start that there wouldn't be enough votes to convict. A motion to call witnesses to trial did pass, but after Senate Republicans threatened to call hundreds of witnesses, which would have caused the trial to go on for months, Democrats caved and moved forward to holding a vote. Following his vote to acquit, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell directly blamed Trump for inciting the riot.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president.
Most of these Republicans are proving to have no morals other than their unrelenting party allegiance. There is significant evidence that Trump played a major role in the insurrection that took place, and the door is still open for civil trials against him, which many are calling for. As much as we'll miss laughing at his tweets, it is kind of refreshing not hearing about him for days at a time.
We provided the Department of Justice with truthful information in our response. It is a lie to say any numbers were inaccurate. That is a lie.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is under major fire with a state attorney general's report finding that his administration undercounted the number of nursing home deaths related to COVID-19 by as much as 50%. Seems like all the praise for that wannabe mobster last year might have been unwarranted. This was further confirmed last week when New York State Secretary Melissa DeRosa admitted on a Zoom call that the administration hid nursing home data from the Department of Justice for the Trump administration. This obstruction of justice is hopefully waking people up to how terrible of a leader Andrew Cuomo really is. The governor built a national profile for himself in the early days of the pandemic for standing up to Trump, with major liberal networks like CNN and MSNBC fawning over his arrogance. There were calls in mid-2020 for Joe Biden to drop out and be replaced by Andrew Cuomo because of how well he handled the pandemic. A March article in Jezebel was titled, "Help, I think I'm in love with Andrew Cuomo," followed by 3 question marks. He was awarded an International Emmy Founders Award in November for his press conferences.
I appreciate the humor from my friends in the video, and I take it in good stride. And to Ben Stiller, whose teasing took liberal license, testing the boundaries of decorum and good taste, I only say New York tough means one more thing. It means, Ben, I know where you live.
Cuomo released a book in October titled American Crisis: Leadership Lessons from the COVID-19 Pandemic. there have been more than 335,000 new cases of COVID-19 and more than 4,000 deaths in New York State since the release of his book. I haven't read the book, but I assume the leadership lessons are something like, you've got to call Trump a big meatball. There are calls from both parties in the state legislature for Governor Cuomo to face impeachment. He has, of course, denied any wrongdoing. It was announced this week that the Brooklyn U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI are now investigating the administration's handling of the data. According to CNN, Cuomo has attempted to turn to Democratic legislators for support and issued threats when his appeals were refused. Assemblyman Ron Kim, whose uncle apparently passed away from COVID in a nursing home in April, received a phone call from Governor Cuomo after Kim made a statement to the New York Post about the cover-up. Cuomo went on to threaten his political career in a 10-minute tirade over the phone, allegedly using words like wrath and who do you think you are?
It was last Thursday night. I was about to bathe my three kids when I received a call from the governor. He spent 10 minutes threatening my career and ordering me to issue a statement that would be used to cover for the state secretary.
The curtain is beginning to be pulled back on the charade of Andrew Cuomo's charismatic appeal. I think he can kiss any future presidential run goodbye with this scandal. As much as I would love to have our first Italian president, I think we will have to wait for another leader to be eating chicken parm in the White House. Let's not forget Cuomo's history as governor before COVID as well. He pretty much served as a Republican for years with his loyalty to the IDC, which was a right-wing caucus within the Democratic Party in New York that held up progressive legislation for years, including a reproductive rights bill called the Reproductive Health Act, legalizing marijuana, and banning corporate campaign contributions. He flipped on many of these issues after he faced a leftist primary challenger in Cynthia Nixon, since her ideas proved to be popular. He wants to maintain power at any cost and will support whatever his wealthy donors want him to over what has popular support. Also, let's be real, he's only governor in the first place because of his daddy.
We've lost a voice like no other and like there will never be again, and particularly at a time when we need a voice like his.
Rush Limbaugh is dead. Lung cancer claimed the life of the conservative talk radio pioneer Wednesday. Rest in piss and rotten hell were trending on Twitter shortly after his death was announced publicly. I am not celebrating his death the way he celebrated the death of gay AIDS victims on his radio show. I'm just reporting the facts here. Limbaugh's career was built on racism, homophobia, Islamophobia, misogyny, and pretty much any form of bigotry you can think of. If I wanted to quote him, most of the things he said on air would likely get me banned from whatever platform you're watching or listening to this on. As of December 2020, Talkers Magazine estimated Rush Limbaugh's radio show had a weekly audience of 15.5 million, making him the most listened to radio show in the United States. Many feel the world is a better place without him using his massive platform to spread hate.
This is not a breakdown in the system. This is a system that is broken down by design.
Severe winter weather has caused states of emergency to be declared in multiple states around the country, including North Carolina, Kentucky, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and Louisiana. But of course, no state has been hit harder than Texas. Mainly due to natural gas pipelines freezing and Texas's energy independence, electricity has been extremely limited. Over 4 million people went without power at some point this week, resulting in at least 30 deaths. The situation has also resulted in over 14 million Texans without potable water. There is currently no estimated time when the water boil notice will be lifted. Weather returned to somewhat normal temperatures in the state, but the repercussions of this catastrophe will be felt for months to come. There are still nearly 100,000 people without power, and grocery stores are completely ransacked, even worse than in the beginning of the pandemic. Oh yeah, remember? There's a pandemic? Vaccine distribution was limited across the country due to the snowstorms as well. Due to the lack of regulation, power companies in Texas are spiking their prices, with one man telling ABC News in Dallas that he owes more than $17,000. That's the free market for you. He can probably sell his bootstraps for $20,000 and be just fine. Conservative media outlets had the nerve to blame windmills and renewable energy for the crisis.
What we saw in Texas certainly shows what folly the Green New Deal would be, how unreliable wind and solar power generation really is.
They said if the Green New Deal passes, it will lead to this sort of thing happening across the country. It's a shock to everyone that Texas leads the nation in green energy. They don't. The real cause of this situation is deregulation. The Republican Texas legislature voted in 2002 to completely privatize their energy sector, with 90% of it overseen by an independent system operator called ERCOT. Other states I mentioned have declared states of emergencies, but they did not face even a fraction of the blackouts Texas did because they are still connected connected to the national power grid. As they ran low on power, other states could send some their way. The Republican legislature made sure Texas is completely on its own. The frozen windmill thing is a joke too. There are windmills in Alaska and Minnesota and they run fine because they're conditioned for cold weather. There was a major snowstorm in Texas in 2011 that caused blackouts, and there were recommendations that ERCOT winterize the equipment across the state. That obviously didn't happen because it's not profitable. Utilities like electricity need to be heavily regulated, if not publicly controlled, to keep the population safe. Otherwise, more crises like this will happen again soon. Amid this catastrophe, Texas Senator Ted Cruz decided to fly to sunny Cancun, Mexico early Thursday to escape the cold and stay at the Ritz-Carlton. His initial itinerary had him returning Saturday, but after photos of him at the airport went viral on Twitter, Senator Cruz hopped on standby for the first flight back. In response to the backlash, Cruz released a statement saying, quote, "With school canceled for the week, our girls asked to take a trip with friends. Wanting to be a good dad, I flew down with them last night and I'm flying back this afternoon," unquote. Normal stuff. We've all dropped our daughters off in another country in the middle of a pandemic and weather crisis with no flight back booked while carrying a huge suitcase. If you haven't done that, you're probably no fun at parties. It's interesting Cruz flew out in his full Clark Griswold attire, but once he was found out, he threw on a good old Texas mask and looked a lot more like his disgusting self. Did he think he was going undercover at the airport? A leaked group chat with Heidi Cruz revealed her inviting several of her friends to come with them to flee the cold. This has sparked a conversation online, raising the big question, is the group chat sacred? Ted Cruz faced harsh criticism across the political spectrum about his Mexican vacation, with calls for his resignation. However, plenty of conservatives have come to his defense.
Like, what exactly? It's not a real-time crisis that Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, can do anything about. Because the senator from Texas is, in fact, in the United States Senate. He's a federal officer, right? He's a federal elected official. This is up to the mayor of Houston and, like, the governor of Texas and all the people who are state-level officials. And also, I just wonder, what is Ted Cruz, like, did they expect Ted to go there with, like, a blowtorch and start defrosting all of the pipelines?
Interesting that Ben Shapiro acknowledges that natural gas pipelines are the cause and not the windmills. Also, yeah, maybe he should be blowtorching them. There's a lot he could be doing. Beto O'Rourke ran a virtual phone bank with over 784,000 calls going out to senior citizens to connect them with necessities. New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has raised over $2 million for relief. This is an unelected official and a representative from another state doing way more than Ted Cruz has. I guess the real lesson here for all of us is, if your constituents are freezing to death, fly private.
To the Amazon workers in Bessemer.
We want you to know that we support your efforts to unionize with the retail, wholesale, and department store union.
The RWDSU is a strong union with deep roots in the South.
They have been a leading voice in Alabama for workers' rights and civil rights.
We respect the work they do.
Organizers at an Amazon warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama are on the verge of cracking Jeff Bezos' anti-union empire. Voting on whether the workers want to join the retail, wholesale, and department store union begin this week in the small town and will continue through March 29th. Labor historian Nelson Liechtenstein said Amazon is getting cheated by their law firm by using old and stale anti-union propaganda tactics. Along with posting anti-union literature around the job site, they are also attempting to hold an in-person vote despite the pandemic. Amazon offered transportation, room, and board to members of the National Labor Relations Board to influence their decision on it. Luckily, the unbiased institution did not succumb to Amazon's request. It seems like Bezos is scared. Since they can't congregate on Amazon property, union organizers would often wait at stoplights outside the warehouse to bring awareness to the importance of union representation. The Verge reported this week that Amazon used their local political power to change the timing of the stoplight to make flyering more difficult. There is evidence that this change in timing may have caused a car accident almost hitting a union organizer. Labor organizing has been a dangerous job for generations, and unionizing a corporate giant like Amazon is no safe task. Amazon has made record profits in the last year due to the pandemic, with CEO Jeff Bezos increasing his wealth by an estimated $100 billion. I think that roly-poly for a head asshole can afford to pay his workers a living wage. It would make sense for the workers nationwide who have enabled this company to flourish to not require government assistance to survive, but Amazon is fighting tooth and nail to prevent this unionization from happening. If this effort in the small town of Bessemer, Alabama is successful, this could lead to warehouses around the country to organize. We will keep a close eye on this fight for labor rights. Also, let's make Amazon pay some taxes for once while we're at it. Let go my ego! In food news, Delish has reported that Eggo will be releasing stuffed pancake bites later this year. We obviously know Eggo is the go-to frozen waffles brand from when we were kids, specifically the chocolate chip variety. Apparently, Eggo does make regular pancakes, but no thanks, it's Lego my Eggo all day with the waffles. However, these new stuffed pancake bites have piqued my interest. They will come stuffed with a few flavors, including strawberry, apple, and chocolate. Throw a little maple syrup on top of that? Sounds like a nice dessert for breakfast. They will be out in April, so keep an eye for them on grocery store shelves or in my freezer. That does it for this week's Fonzie Scheme Briefing. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Follow me on Twitter, at Evan Fonzie, and come hang out in a Twitch live stream sometime. We're live at twitch.tv/EvanFonzie every Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific time. Clips from the Twitch show drop on my YouTube channel frequently at youtube.com/EvanFonzie. As always, our music was composed, written, and recorded by Ari Solis. Check him out at arisolis.bandcamp.com or somewherethide.com. We'll see you next week. Yeah.